Today on Happy, Sad, Confused, Alex Wolf breaks out in a big way with Jumanji and Hereditary. Hey guys, I'm Josh Horowitz. Welcome to the podcast. Welcome back after, yes, a holiday week off. Hope you all had a great July 4th. I'm back, and Alex Wolf is back. Well, he's not back. He's here for the first time, actually. First-time guest on Happy, Sad, Confused. Always love welcoming a fellow New Yorker. Yes, people can be raised in New York City and not be feral wild animals. I am proof of that. Alex Wolf is proof of that. Our buddy Timothy Chalamet, Nat Wolf. That's like at least five. The rest of them, they're feral animals. No, it was a joy to have Alex Wolf in the podcast studio, aka my office, talking all things Hereditary, which, if you haven't figured it out yet, is definitely one of my favorite films of the year. Came out a few weeks back. It is still in theaters. It's going to be in theaters, I think, for a while, because it's one of those films that is spreading, I think, via word of mouth. It's got great critical praise, justifiably so. Definitely one of my favorites of the year. For those that don't know, it's a kind of a psychological horror thriller drama. It certainly escalates as the film goes. It stars Toni Collette, Gabriel Byrne, and Alex Wolf. And, you know, the less said, the better. If you haven't heard the story yet, I don't want to ruin it, and we certainly don't spoil anything in this podcast. But basically, it's kind of a family drama, wherein the matriarch of a family dies even before the opening credits, and then this family is dealing with the grief and loss of that and other things, and it just kind of snowballs from there, and it gets pretty intense and pretty horrific. And it stars Toni Collette, who was on the podcast a few weeks back. You should listen to that if you haven't already. And also Alex Wolf, who has an amazing performance in it, and I frankly haven't seen Alex in much yet. I know him primarily through his brother Nat, who I've gotten to know quite a bit over the last few years. You know, Nat's been a very busy actor in things like Fault in Our Stars, and it was a joy to kind of sort of see him kind of start to explode onto the scene. And now there's the younger Wolf, and he's making his own path and charting his own course, and good for him. He has a lot going on. He also starred in Jumanji as kind of the younger, different avatar that turned into Dwayne Johnson in that ginormous hit. You might have seen him in that. Or you might know him for the Naked Brothers Band. Him and Nat were very successful musicians, actors on a TV show and a film and an actual band called the Naked Brothers Band, which, look, I'm 97 years old. It wasn't necessarily made for me, but I know had quite a following. So both Nat and Alex have kind of morphed their careers in different ways. Music is still close to their hearts, but acting and acting opportunities are coming at them with a increased frequency and greater opportunities. And it's just exciting to sort of see each of them get new, exciting opportunities. And Hereditary was one that he made the most of. So really thrilled to welcome Alex Wolf onto the show, and to welcome a fellow film geek. You guys know I always love talking to fellow film nerds, and he certainly is one, and he proved his stuff in this conversation. So I hope you enjoy this chat. As you hear this probably by now, I am hopefully, if all goes according to plan, covering the new Mission Impossible film. Mission Impossible Fallout is having its world premiere in Paris. That's where I am. Hopefully, as you hear this, talking to all the stars, talking to Tom Cruise and Simon Pegg, Rebecca Ferguson, all these people that have been on the podcast, and Henry Cavill. I love the Mission Impossible films. So hopefully it is as good as the rest, if not better. I will report back on the next podcast to let you know how the premiere went, how the film is, how the interviews were, and make sure to check out. I'll post all that stuff on my Twitter and Instagram, Joshua Horowitz. Anyway, that's what I'm up to. I hope you guys are having a great summer, staying away from the heat. It is 150 degrees here in New York, so turn up that AC and enjoy this conversation with Alex Wolf. Remember to rate, subscribe, review. Wow, usually I say rate, review, and subscribe. It sounded totally different when I mixed up the order. But spread the good word of Happy, Sad, Confused. And I hope you guys enjoy this chat with Alex Wolf. Well, it's a slow holiday week, but it's not slow anymore because the one and only Alex Wolf has entered my office. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great now that you put my name in big letters on the whiteboard.
We started off, we've been through a lot already, let's be honest. In the 3 minutes you've been here, we learned how to use the coffee machine at MTV, which I've never used before.
It's actually fairly easy. I didn't know it'd be that easy. Usually I have trouble with coffee machines, but this is very easy.
And that was a bonding experience, I feel
it was.
And then you saw the famous, it's been talked about many times on this podcast, the famous New York City board. And you were.
And I didn't like my placement, so we moved it to under Harvey Keitel
in big letters.
I am definitely the biggest man on the board.
Yeah, there's John Lithgow as almost as big.
How do you say his name? You said
Lithgow?
John Lithgow. Wow, that's news to me. Oh my god, you have a giant ET thing in here.
I do. There's a lot in here, man.
It's awesome.
It's good to see you, man. Welcome aboard. A lot going on in your life. How's the summer treating you?
Summer's treating me well. You know, it's been kind of crazy, a little busy, but
in a good way, it seems like.
Yeah. In a really good way.
So we have Hereditary, which we're going to cover. Which is, I'm obsessed with. Tony was on the podcast a few weeks back. Unbelievable. You are still basking in the glow of all Jumanji-ness, hopefully.
Yeah.
When you make $1 billion, you can bask in that for a little while, right?
Just for a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. And you're busy editing a film.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, we're like done. We're like picture lock now, and we'll be color correcting this next week. So I can't change it anymore. So that's it. That's the movie.
It's been taken away from
exactly.
you.
Exactly. It's in stone.
We'll get to that. That's an exciting development because you directed it. You wrote it too, I believe.
Wrote it, directed it, and starred in it. Yeah.
Crazy. So we're taping this the day after July 4th. What are there Wolf family July 4th traditions? Is it a big holiday?
Nat and I weren't together. It's not a huge holiday. I mean, especially with this guy as our president. But my brother was in LA. I was in New York. I didn't really have any big plans, but I sort of invited a few friends, and a few friends invited a few friends, and soon enough, like, I was just kicking people out of my house. There was way too many people at my house, and I was like, this has got to stop. So I just kicked everybody out.
Are you that guy? Are you the guy that brings people together? Are you the hostess with the mostest?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
100%, yeah.
Okay.
Bring everybody together.
Yeah.
I think anybody would say that. I'm like, I like get everybody to be like.
Not me. I would not say that.
Yeah, I guess. Other than you, someone who doesn't know how to work the coffee machine in your own place.
Help me.
No, I mean, I think that like I'll bring friends who wouldn't normally be together. Right. And I'm just like last night at the party, there were a bunch of people who didn't know each other. So I would make everybody talk to someone they didn't know. Friend groups wouldn't just be like. So I'm like a bully. I'm like a social.
No, it's a good thing. You're forcing contact, which can great things can come of that, or horrible things, frankly, too.
Yeah, I get people out of their shell, which could be interpreted as a bully, like a good bully, a helpful bully, like a self-help bully.
I feel like I like to separate groups. I don't like different sides of family to intermix. I just like everybody just to keep to their corners, no friction. I don't even want you to know each other.
Interesting. That's
a different
very
tactic.
Interesting. I think that's a tactic that isn't a good one.
As I said it out loud, it sounded horrible.
Kind of horrible.
It sounded actually like
– sounded a little like
Trump
fascist-y.
Supporter. Yeah.
Sounded a little –
I'm going to take it back. Everybody should hang out together. I'm like, no, everybody should stay with people of their own kind. Like, what? That sounded horrible.
Yeah. No, I definitely feel the opposite way.
I'm always a sucker for bringing New Yorkers in. I'm born and raised New Yorker myself. I think it's why I gravitate towards
Where'd you go to school?
So I'm 90,000 years old. Just keep that in mind. My school has been like decimated 300 years ago.
Okay.
But, I was a public school kid. I grew up on the Upper West Side.
Cool.
And then I
like
did
one of the PS.
Yes.
Like,
PS 87, then IS 44 on the Upper West.
Nice.
And then I did actually go to Stuyvesant for a year and then Dalton. So I did do private.
Oh,
the last
wow.
few years.
Dalton. Yikes.
I Daltoned it up.
Yeah. Did you love Dalton? Did you like it?
No.
No one likes Dalton.
No. It was fine. It was also weird because I came in as a sophomore and those kids all knew each other since they were in kindergarten.
Right.
So I was odd man out.
Terrible.
From the start.
That's a nightmare.
So what
Absolute
was
nightmare.
What was your schooling situation? Did you do the homeschooling?
I went to real school. No, I went to real school. Then
was it called real school? Or
it was called real school. It was called Real School Inc., actually. No, I went to a place called Friends Seminary. Yeah. And when I got on Naked Brothers Band, and when Naked Brothers Band kind of took off, it became harder to do that. So I went to a school called, but I didn't want to do homeschooling. Me and my brother were like, no, that's a terrible idea.
Yeah.
So we went to my brother first. And then I came a year later to a school called PCS. That's absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Children's School. Yeah, they're amazing. It's like literally just a real school, but you can miss school for doing professional stuff, you know? So it's the ideal situation. And it's not like fame or something. It's not like,
they're not teaching you the craft there. Exactly. They're just making the allowances to make sure you can live a normal life.
Absolutely.
And
yeah, exactly. Help you.
Did like Claire Danes way back when go there?
Claire Danes
right?
went there. Yeah, yeah. Scarlett Johansson went there and some people went there to name drop a few, but one thing that is very funny is when they do school plays, they are basically Broadway musicals. I mean, I remember seeing Our Town with the high school when I was like in eighth grade or something. I was like, this is like the best thing I've ever seen. I mean, it's the most unbelievable thing I've ever seen.
I'm sure. Yeah, like the alumni group meetings for that could be you could go straight to Broadway.
Oh, 100%. No, it's really the place. Even the seventh grade play is like Legally Blonde. So Millie Shapiro, who's in Hereditary, went to PCS.
Oh, no
so,
kidding. Okay.
Yeah, so I knew her and I saw her in a play and I was like, that girl's unbelievable. Like, unbelievable singer and actress. And then,
she's
my sister.
Together. She's amazing in the film, too.
But, unbelievable.
But I also feel like, because I don't know about you, when I encounter people out in the wild, especially outside of New York, or even in New York, when they find out that I grew up in the city, they look at me like I'm some kind of like feral beast. Like, how do you even
you grew up in the city?
Yeah, you grew up.
Oh, no, but I'm saying like, where did you live? And I'm like, in the city. Yeah, in Manhattan.
On the streets of Manhattan? Wow. What? Like underneath like a bridge?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I don't think people understand. I think it's, but I loved it. I mean, I think it's the best.
Oh, yeah. I don't think you could do it any other way. I was surrounded by every type of ethnicity, person. I got punched in the face on the subway. Like,
That's all this past week.
Yeah, exactly. No, I just feel like I've been really exposed to the world.
That's what I always say, too. Yeah, it's that you are forcibly colliding with every segment of society in a 100%. Great way. I mean, even if you grew up with means in New York, it's just the nature of the city. It's like, you can't walk around in like a bubble in New York.
Right.
You're going to go into the subway and get dirty and
absolutely
meet every kind of person.
You have to.
Your parents, obviously mom, an actress, among other things, dad, a musician, among other things, how did they end up in New York? Do you even know?
Yeah, I know that they were in LA and, my mom went to do a play in New York and came here and just stayed here. And we still kind of go back and forth, between LA and New York. Like, my parents have a place in LA. But I have a place here in New York. So I mostly stay here in New York. We're kind of bi-coastal, but I'm mostly a New Yorker.
Got it.
And I avoid LA at all costs.
Do you drive?
No, absolutely not.
Do you have a license?
I drive in movies and I almost always kill someone.
I don't have a license and I'm twice your age, so don't worry.
Yeah, no, we grew up in New York. Why would we have a license? Like, there's just absolutely no reason to.
Totally. So, where to begin? Okay. Well, there's a lot to talk about. So, cause I feel like it's funny cause I've done a lot with Nat over the last few years. So I feel like I know you in proximity. I'm like, I know of you and I've started to talk to you a little bit. I saw you at the Jumanji premiere. So, part of me just wants to make Nat jealous by having you on the podcast first.
Love it. Yeah,
so I hope that's accomplished.
Oh, I love that.
The age difference between you guys is what, like 3 years?
3 years, yeah.
Got it. So when did
Nat's 3 years older.
When did that start to like collapse? Because you're now at the age where like that probably doesn't matter as much. Like, but when you're like 4 and 7 or 10 and 13, it feels like a chasm.
Well, it always is a little bit different because of the movie roles we do are always age wise. Different. I mean, it's not like, there's not many things where we're overlapping in age because he's 3 years older. Yeah. And the difference between someone who's 23 and 20 can be decent. That can be a decent difference. But no, I mean, it doesn't matter. And honestly, it probably stopped mattering when we were teenagers. You know, it stopped to actually no, because in school it did matter that I was in ninth grade and he was in 12th.
Yeah, the 12th graders don't want to hang out with the ninth graders.
Yeah. So actually, probably after I graduated high school is when it was just like, you know, who cares?
Well, no, it is interesting though. Actually, didn't even occur to me until you mentioned it, because like now you're entering a stage where you could conceivably be up for the same roles. Like that age difference isn't that huge anymore. And the difference between like a 25-year-old and a 22-year-old is negligible.
Right.
Has that happened yet? Is that something that's going to be odd?
Very rarely. Okay. And very rarely, it actually doesn't happen very often. It's happened a few times. But we look very different just in our ethnicities, kind of. I look like I'm from like a different country. But we're just very different actors, even though I'm feeling like I'm always kind of just looking to see what Nat's doing to be inspired and copied as much as possible. But we're just very, very different. So it doesn't happen very often,
right,
like at all. But it occasionally will. And it's always... we're so much less competitive with each other than like, I don't know, other actors. Like,
right,
you know, we're just kind of excited for each other. And since this past, you know, whatever 2 years has been pretty nuts for me, Nat's just been like, you know, super excited. And
yeah. So do you guys talk about industry, acting, all of the above? Like,
not really.
Really?
Not that much. I mean, we're in a band together, so
right.
I mean, we talk about like movies and we talk about the creative part of movies and whatever. But it's boring to talk about just career stuff. Just
right.
Who cares? Like,
right.
But I guess we talk about music. We talk about, you know, girls. Talk about crushes, chicks,
guy stuff.
We talk about the state of Israel and Palestine.
Guy stuff.
Guy stuff.
Classic guy stuff. So let's talk about movie sensibilities, because that's always an important part of someone's DNA, as far as I'm concerned. You already made fun of my Dune poster. I get it.
Yeah.
It's okay. Most people hate the original Dune movie.
Yes.
I was a young boy when Dune came out. It had a formative effect on me.
It's just funny that like I walk in and the
like
posters
great movies
you have
and then.
Yeah, yeah. Color of Money, Back to the Future, and Dune.
It's the 80s. It's my 80s walls.
So you grew up in the 80s?
Yeah.
How old are you? Jesus Christ.
I'm old.
You look like you're like 23.
I appreciate that. I'm 42, man.
No, you're not.
I swear to God.
No, you're not.
Yeah. I'll show you my... I was going to say birth certificate.
You're not 42.
I am 42.
So no, you're not.
I love this part of the conversation. I am. I swear
are you
to
really
God.
42?
Yeah. Okay, for the record, Alex is having a moment. This is
You're
very sweet.
42?
I bathe in oil valet every morning for 3 hours.
Dude, that is crazy.
Look.
You look literally like if you told me you were 25, I believe it.
That's very sweet. Man.
Wow.
So let's I'm not just like an 80s fetishist. I'm not like, must live in the 80s.
No, that is nuts.
But let's talk about your sensibilities growing up. Like, what were the movies that rocked your world? Because one of the fun things is like something like Hereditary is going to rock the world of like the 15-year-old that like gets in, sees their first like R-rated movie or whatever. It's going to fuck them up.
Yeah. I think it's going to rock the world of like 30s and 40s-year-olds, and it's going to ruin the lives of the 15-year-olds to the 20-year-olds.
And totally traumatize the 8-year-old that snuck in.
Yeah. No, the 8-year-old who walks in, he's over. He's going to military. He's going to the military.
It's done.
Yeah.
What were the ones that when you think back to growing up, what were the ones that really rocked your world as a kid?
It's funny. I was just thinking about this. The movie that probably rocked my world the most was Stand By Me.
Yeah.
Stand By Me when I was a kid. Because I saw it when I was a kid and I was like, that's what it is. That's just the shit. Like, that's the best it can get. Just these kids. And I just remember thinking that was just... So I loved Stand By Me. I loved The Goonies. I loved... I was into Annie Hall when I was pretty young through my brother. And, you know, I always loved the Harry Potter movies. I mean, this is when I was really young.
Were you like going to like the bookstore when the new ones came out? Were you that age?
Yeah.
It was right for
no,
that.
No, I was psyched. I was psyched up about the Harry Potter movies. I remember just freaking out about them every time they came out. So I love the Harry Potter movies, but no, I watched, Airplane. I loved Airplane when I was a little kid.
Genius.
I loved Airplane. Yeah. I saw One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest when I was really young. And I remember not really just being disturbed by it, but being really moved by it.
Yeah.
And
There are a few that, because I remember, look, as you can tell, I'm a film geek. Like, it's always like that first time that you start to like notice the filmmaker, or the director, and then you start to like go down like that path. And like, you know, you see The Godfather and you're like, wait, I need to see everything this guy ever directed.
Oh, yeah.
And same thing like Milos Forman for The Cuckoo's Nest. Like, those guys, like,
that's Amadeus, also.
Amadeus is an amazing
actually, that
movie.
I saw really young. I saw that when I was like 5 or 6. And that movie formed
kind of
me.
A perfect movie.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect 3-hour movie.
Well, it is kind of, yeah. But it's kind of. You're right, because I saw that at a pretty young age too, and it's shockingly like entertaining.
No, yeah, it's not boring. It's interesting. It's 3 hours, but it's not boring at all.
Yeah,
at all.
Because he's kind of like a rock star.
Yeah, he is.
So, but it's interesting because like. So was your, like, were you, you know, obviously Naked Brothers Band is something that you got involved in quite young. So, like, were you on, like, what are your first memories of, like, being on a set? Like, mm-hmm. Is it being on your own set? Is it being on mom's set? Like, what was your first understanding of, like, the machinations of making art, making this stuff?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I feel like I was a little bit protected from... looking at it like making a, you know, it was sort of about just having fun with my friends. And my mom did this really amazing thing because she was, you know, she directed Naked Brothers Band and all that. She did this amazing thing where she kind of just was quietly filming us, you know, being sneaky about it almost, you know, and she'd be like, okay, just move a little bit. Okay, great. And just keep talking. You know, she'd make it. So this thing didn't feel like, it just felt like I had to position myself a little differently and then hang out with my friends. Or like, you know, I had to do this weird makeup on my face, but I could just hang out with my friends.
Right.
And
she wasn't making you do things you wouldn't want to do anyway.
Right.
It was just sort of like adding a slight 10% of artifice around it.
Yeah. Except one time, like one of the first episodes of Naked Brothers Band. This makes my mom look awful. My mom is great on the whole show and she's amazing. But one episode when the network was first there and they were like kind of scoping us out, it was like our first episode, a basketball had to hit my head and I was being kind of a diva. And I was like, I don't want it to hit my head. I don't want it to hit my mom. I was like, come on, toughen up. You know, you'll be fine. She's like, look. And she grabs a basketball and throws it at my head. And I just start crying. And I just start like hysterically crying. The network's like, this crazy woman. She's like, okay, great, let's start rolling. And just like,
it's the only way I can get him to work. Trust me.
It was hilarious.
Should see what I do to Nat.
Yeah, exactly.
It's all good.
Yep.
So, how old were you when the camera started to roll on Naked Brothers
Six.
Band?
On that first movie, I was six. And then the show I did when I was eight.
Crazy.
So, I had 2 years to go to the actor's studio. No, I'm just kidding. Right,
that's Lofsky, the whole thing.
Exactly.
But did your mom teach you a little bit about acting? Like, was that at that point, was it too young to like teach you stuff? Or like, at what point can you start to get technique as a kid?
Well, my mom. And it's not very cool. Like, it's not cool to say that your mom, whatever, but it's the truth. Like, my mom taught me everything I know about everything, really. I mean, my mom taught me everything I know about acting, whatever, but she really tried to keep us away from, like, I remember I started working with an acting coach really young because, you know, the network was like, well, why don't they work with an acting coach? And she stopped me from working with an acting coach. She was like, you know, and she said, you know, later on you'll find someone who's great as an acting coach or whatever, but right now, I see you developing habits or stuff, you know, and I want you to just be free. And it was really important for me as a kid to be like that. It was really important for me to, and I feel like my whole career has been trying to tap into that freedom I had as a kid, you know.
Right. Well, for any actor, that's what it is. It's about sort of like capturing that, like, I mean, it sounds cliched and kind of silly, like highfalutin, but like that innocence, that rawness.
Yeah.
It's like about stripping away. Like, yeah, you can learn all the technique you want, but in the end, it's ironically about kind of stripping all that away.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You feel like it's just bare and you're not seeing anything on the screen except a human being.
Yeah. I mean, I there's not a huge difference between me crying about the basketball hitting my head on Egger Brothers Band and me having the panic attack on the bleachers in Hereditary. I mean, it's the same gut reaction thing. And, you know, I don't know what training really even means, but I just know that shit is hard to do no matter what.
Yeah. So how do you get, how do you, starting to get into a little bit of Hereditary stuff? Thanks for the segue.
Accidental segue.
No, you're a pro clearly. But like you go to some super intense places, all the actors do, but you in particular, even, there's like a series of scenes that are, just as extreme as you can get. How tough was it to kind of go to those heights and did you feel like you were out on a limb or did you feel like, you know, you were in safe hands? You were with a first time filmmaker. Give me a sense.
Yeah. I mean, it was a breeze, man. No, no, it was really hard. Every day was like the hardest day I've had ever. And I really think Ari is responsible for me feeling that safe because, I mean, I don't really care if you're a first-time director or if you're a seasoned director, if you don't feel safe you're not going to be able to just do what I did in this movie. And I think Ari is a genius, and I think he gets a lot of credit for how brilliant he is with camera movement, how brilliant he is with his script, how brilliant he is with just, you know, blocking and staging and how amazing that all is. But really, while he's doing all that, he is so intimate with actors and he cares so much about performance, and he really is like, he really reminds me of when you hear people talk about Sidney Lumet or young Martin Scorsese, yeah, or young, you know, Milos Forman, or just all the guys. He's one of the guys. Or Paul Thomas Anderson. Like, he's one of the guys. Just wait. Like, he's one of those dudes. So, yeah, for me, I mean, I was a disaster a little bit emotionally, and I had to just bring myself there. I was like a controlled disaster. We both just decided we were going to kamikaze the plane right into the ground together, and I think we both did, and I think we both went through something, yeah, and it was cathartic, and it was hard, and it was whatever, but it was also great, and it was good, and it was, and I think you can see in the movie that I think we both really went through it. I mean, we really did go through that whole thing, yeah, and yeah.
I'm totally on board with everything you're saying about Ari. I mean, just as a first time feature filmmaker, like, I'm always attracted to like a confidence behind the camera, and just like, he just shows, like, maybe unjustifiably for a first time feature filmmaker, but like, he like knows what he wants.
Yeah, it's frustrating for the rest of humanity.
but it's also, you know, there must be also a learning and inspiration from seeing someone like Toni Collette, acting opposite you in some of these super extreme moments, because she's going for broke too. And like, you know, this is one of our great actors. So I guess when you see her like pushing herself and being willing to put herself out there and, you know, what could be embarrassing or silly if done wrong or in the wrong hands, like when you see her do it, like, oh, if she's willing to go there, I better fucking go there too.
Right. I mean, I think kind of everybody did that. I mean, Millie and Gabriel also just, you know, really threw themselves out there. And I think it was sort of a whole, everybody put themselves on the line for this movie. And I think that, you know, I was inspired by every single person just putting themselves out there. It was really amazing.
Are you spending as much time like the summer, like going to as many theaters as possible, seeing this with an audience?
I actually haven't seen it at all. And it sucks that I haven't done that. I know I should, but it's still sold out every screening apparently, or at night, because all my friends have gone to see it. Like last week someone said that it was sold out, so I'm still gonna try and go see a sold out screening, but it's, just hear everybody scream. And I've seen the movie twice, and that was more than enough. I mean, like, it's just watching myself just get the shit kicked out of me. So it's just like, you know.
See, I enjoy that. I want to see me, the shit kicked out of
me.
Well,
you. Then just go see any of my movies in the past 2 years.
That's your thing. Exactly. but no, I can tell it's permeated the culture, and it started to go somewhere where my parents went to see it. And this is not a
That's
film
awesome.
That my parents would ever see.
Yeah.
And they were just hearing about it. Same not even from parents. Me. But it is an experience. Like the first time I saw it, I was telling Toni this, like, I've been hearing the buzz about this. I missed it at, it was at Sundance, right?
Yeah.
I missed it at Sundance.
Me too.
But like by the time I got to a critic screening of it, every critic in the screening like looked at each other before the screening started, and they were like, are we going to be okay? Like, are we in this together? Cause will you hold my hand? Cause I don't know if, and sure enough, the last 20 minutes I was like a wreck, but in a great way. Like, I mean, it's kind of, yeah, it's one of my favorite film going experiences in a while.
That's awesome.
It's pretty great, man.
Yeah, it's.
So bouncing around. Oh, here's something I want to mention. I didn't even realize this at the time, but so you mentioned Gabriel Byrne. You were on In Treatment, which is a great show.
Yeah, it is a great show.
Great show. Ran a few seasons. Some great actors came out of that. Mia Wasikowska was on it.
Yeah. What's his name? Dane DeHaan.
Yeah. So what was your experience like on that?
That was very interesting. And Gabriel was my serious mentor on that show. And he was like, I told him, I was like, you met me at two very critical points in my life and guided me, were my guiding light through two very important emotional times in my life. And I remember Naked Brothers Band was over and I didn't really know, you know, what I was doing. And I remember being in the city and I sort of had, there's a big jump between 11 and 12 and nobody tells you that, you know, because you're not taken seriously. But for all the 12-year-olds out there listening to this, 11 to 12 to 13 is probably the biggest like cataclysmic shift
right.
that you could have. And I remember being...
And throw in the end of a job like Naked Brothers Band.
Yeah, no, exactly. And it was like, what the hell is going on? And I remember just really changing as a person. And I then, so then I got in treatment, this, you know, about this messed up kid yeah. who doesn't want to live with his dad, his divorced parents. And that was the first time I'd ever done anything really emotional and serious. And Gabriel was there for me. And he says, you know, he went into my trailer when I was 12 and he said, listen to me, you're going to be a movie star. I'm telling you right now. And then I brought that up in Hereditary. I said, you know, that's like been my guiding. That's been like my mantra. You know, it's been, and he was like, I never said that. I was like, yeah, you did. You said that to me when I was 12. And he's like, I never said that. I don't believe in that. You know, he's like, I think you've gotten to be a really better actor, but I would never say you're going to be a movie star. I'm like, well, then Gabriel, God damn it. Then it's like in Talladega Nights, when his dad's like, if you ain't first, you're last.
Yeah.
And then he's like, I never said that. There's second, there's third, there's fourth. So yeah, Gabriel Amazing. Did that to me.
Was that one of those shows? I mean, it's been a while since I saw it, but like, I remember it was occurring to me because they were almost like plays, like the volumes of dialogue.
Yeah.
Like, was it tough for, how old were you then? Like 15 or something? Or
12.
Oh, you were 12. So this is the 12.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
How do you like memorize those volumes of words at 12? Or maybe it's easier.
Well, I wasn't in a session. I wasn't in the session. So I was his son outside. So it wasn't like that crazy. But I learned how to read while memorizing, basically. Because I could read at 5, but like when I was 6, I was memorizing dialogue. So, you know, there were words that I was memorizing that I'd never read before. So right now when I like read stuff, I pretty much have a photographic memory because when I was little, I just would, you know, so memorizing is not difficult for me at
all.
It's
a good skill to have.
It's pretty good for our
field. Industry in particular. Yeah. Yeah.
It's good.
Well, honestly, that's like the thing I've said before, but like when I see like a play, like it's not about even the acting. I'm like, how did they memorize all this dialogue? That's like,
if you're thinking that during the play, then that is a bad play. If you're thinking about
no, it's just I'm yeah, maybe that's true. So
that was tough, actually, with my play I did a few months ago. That was tough.
Yeah,
yeah, memorizing all the dialogue.
So how do you look back? How many years was Naked Brothers Band at this?
So I'm 20. I did it at 6. I mean, you do the math. That's probably
5 years, 6 to 11. You said.
Oh, no. I did Naked Brothers Band from 6 to 10.
Yeah.
But I thought you said how many years since I started.
Oh, no. Sorry. So it's the run of the movie and then the TV show. I was curious about.
Yeah, because there was 2 years between the movie and the show. So 6, 7, 10, 11. Yeah, it was 3 years on the show and then 1 year for the movie. So.
And forgive me, because again, I'm 90,000 years old.
Yeah.
So I wasn't the demographic
watching
your show at the time. Like, how big did you guys get? Like, how big did it feel? Again, like, there's nothing to compare it to when you're 9 years old.
Well, we went to the Kids' Choice Awards, and that was basically the biggest
as big as you get.
I mean, it really was, and I almost feel like really lucky that at each stage in my career, I feel like I've gotten to do the things that are the coolest for me right now. Like as a kid, the coolest things were Kids' Choice Awards and, you know, Drake and Josh,
right.
And you know that, and then to follow Drake and Josh, and then to, you know, my brother was nominated for Kids' Choice Award. We performed at the Kids' Choice Awards. Like, Rihanna put her hand in my hair and called me a cutie. Like, I remember being like, well, it doesn't get better than this.
I have peaked at 9.
Exactly. Story of my life. You have no idea. But then, like, now, you know, the coolest thing is like A24 and like,
yes.
You know, movies like Dahmer and,
yeah.
And, you know, Patriot's Day and Peter Berg. And those are like the coolest things. And then to be a part of that, it's just, I feel like it's going to keep, you know,
yeah.
evolving. I'll like die tomorrow and nothing will, you know.
Got to set new goals.
Yeah.
So yeah, the big transition from 11 to 12, which is, by the way, one of the first time that discussion's happened on this podcast in 250 episodes.
Probably ever. I don't think anyone talks about that.
You're uncovering controversial subjects. But then, so after in treatment, in the years between that and Dahmer and Patriot's Day and Jumanji, how big a priority is acting and music then? Like, are you just being a kid or are you like?
No, it was a big priority. It's just no one wants to hire you when you were that age. And
right.
Nobody tells you that. And I'm here, hopefully, some 13-year-old, 14-year-olds. It is impossible to, and I did two movies. I did Harebrained and I did A Birder's Guide to Everything. Also, movies I'm proud of. I mean, particularly Birder's Guide to Everything was like one of the most amazing experiences of my life. And I did it when I was 14 and it was a bunch of 14, 15-year-olds. And it was the most fun I've ever had in my life.
Right.
But, I mean, it's really difficult to get work from literally the time of like 14 to or 13 to 16.
Like, nobody what kind of really stuff are you going up for? Is it like
you're going for everything? And it's really hard to get it because you're at a weird age and they want either a legal 18 or they want a little kid, and you right. have pimples and you have a big, you know, nose, and you're like, you know, you're trying to grow out of this thing, and it's this painful, painful period.
Yeah.
And you start to question yourself. And, you know, I slowly but surely was doing more and more auditioning and getting better. And I started writing Cat in the Moon when I was about 15 because I was going out with all my friends and it was the beginning of high school.
Yeah.
And it was this very interesting time in New York. You know, we're talking about growing up in New York, and that was really exhilarating. So while I wasn't getting work when I was like 15 and 16 or something, I was writing the script and I started making these shorts and really kind of getting my beak wet with directing and whatever. And then 16 hit. And I got this movie Coming Through the Rye, and from there it sort of started to become kind of constant. It was Coming Through the Rye, and then it was Big Fat Greek Wedding 2, and then it was Patriot's Day, and then that was a whole new thing, and House of Tomorrow, and Dahmer, and Jumanji, and then it started to just become this thing, and now I'm here. But it you know, it wasn't. And then through all that, I was developing the script of Cat in the Moon. I was getting it off the ground. I was figuring out what I was going to do, and then I just made it, you know.
It's kind of a, I mean, whether it's luck or some inherent, you know, self-preservation, the fact that you kind of like channeled, you know, constant rejection at 15, you know, which is like the worst time I can think of to be constantly rejected. Like, I was a mess at 15 anyway,
let alone
going on dozens of auditions and being told, but your voice is changing and you're fat.
Absolutely.
And like,
exactly.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Like, it's so
brutal.
So kudos to you for like being like, you know, I'm going to go hide in my room and write for a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, and that must be fascinating. So you mentioned this film that you've been writing for a while and that you've shot and that you've now picture locked, amazing. And like that you started, I mean, this is like Super Bad all over again. You hear the stories about those guys
who
started writing it when they were like 12 or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
So you've been working on this since you were a different guy.
15.
You were 15. Now you're 20. How did that project morph or change? How is it different than it started?
I was talking with someone about that. Honestly, the characters changed. I mean, you couldn't even, of course they changed. The dialogue changed and everything, but it was interesting. I was talking with the cast about this like the other night because I was hanging out with a lot of them, and I was like, wow, you know, when I look back at the original draft, the actual order of the scenes are almost identical. You know, there's a few scenes different,
right?
You know, a few things that happen, and the dialogue's completely different.
The structure's there, but like
the structure was there kind of in the original format, you know, it was always kind of there. It's interesting how it's important not to get rid of the magic that comes out of you in the first draft, but it is also important to not make a movie that you wrote when you were 15. And so it really did change a lot. I mean, it's, you can't even compare it almost, but just scene order wise, it's interesting how he goes here, he does this, all the plot points are very similar.
Yeah.
It just got a lot more mature. I got more perspective on the characters, you know?
I'm sure.
But it's good to not get rid of everything that you wrote when you were sort of in the midst of it, because I was writing what I was seeing around
me. It's like a fever pitch
type
of like experience.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you kind of take a step back. And
so did you have the immediate, I mean, you know, for any first time filmmaker, and you'd done some shorts, but like doing a feature, a different ball of wax.
Yeah.
And you're probably 19 at the time when you're on set or something.
Yeah.
Did you have like the respect of the crew? Were these friends? Like, did it feel like you were?
I mean, honestly, it's, you have more respect than you do as a young actor. I mean, it's like, it's more their job to respect you a little bit. But honestly, I mean, they came on. I expected everybody to just be like, well, fuck this kid. You know, like I kind of had that more in my head. And so I was kind of like, well, I got to prove myself and just be so respectful of everybody. And I mean, I felt lucky because people were like, you know, when you're making a short, especially when you make it for no money, the way I did all my shorts, you're like surprised if you can make anything work. And then like people are coming up to you, they're like, do you like a burnt orange or like a peach orange?
Right.
And I'm like, oh my God, it doesn't matter.
I think
like,
I'm colorblind.
That's amazing.
This way,
yeah, exactly. You're just blown away that people care enough to do that.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, you know, I'm like 20, I'm making my film. I don't care at all. Like, that's awesome. Like, And then you guys just find a balance. I mean, you start to figure it out, and then you start to assume your position, and you start to come in and you realize it's your job to be whatever. But I think it's important to just not think about how old they are, how old you are, and not think about your position versus their position. You're all there together. You're all working the same hours. You're all doing this thing, and you just want to make the movie. So if you just focus every day on just the creative element of it, things seem to fall in place.
Are you at the point now, having recently like picture locked, do you love it? Do you hate it? Are you sick of it? Are you like just like want to get it out beyond the edit room? Where's your head at right now?
It just depends on the day. I mean, there are things that I really wish I could have done differently. Yeah. Very small things, but for the most part, it is way better than I thought it was going to be. And everybody is amazing in it. Like they really are. Like Mike Epps gives an unbelievable dramatic performance. He's just unbelievable. And most people know him for being really funny and being this hilarious, crazy comedian.
Yeah.
And that brought a lot to it anyway, but no one has seen a lot of the work that I'd seen, like a movie like Sparkle or like Bessie. He was unbelievably dramatic in those movies. And that was all I'd seen him do. I hadn't seen him do stand up. I just saw those two movies and I was like, that guy is the shit. And like, I need to get him in my movie. And then like Stefania Owen is just an unbelievable actress and who's going to be in Beach Bums and all these different things.
Right.
And Skylar Gisondo and Tommy Nelson. And just, I just got so lucky with this cast. It's just unbelievable. So, yeah.
So give me a sense where you're at. So you're done with that for now. The buzz off of Hereditary has to be a nice boon for the career.
Oh, yeah.
I would imagine. I mean, Jumanji alone would have been nice, but it's like Jumanji is a different kind of thing. I mean, that's seen by everybody, but it's you being in a $1 billion movie has its advantages, but I would say arguably probably this kind of role in Hereditary is more even impactful for the career, even than Jumanji, right? Are you already seeing sort of like a difference in kind of being up for different kind of things and just sort of the discussions are a little more interesting?
Yeah. I mean like people, really cool people know who I am from this movie. And it's really rare that you get that where you ripped your heart out for a movie. You know, you were broken. You had no idea what you did. I almost blacked out that whole movie because I just, you know, gave everything I had and whatever happened, I was like, I don't know. Like people would ask how it go, how to win. And I was like, I don't know. You know, it was such an emotional thing. But then to then have like Barry Jenkins being like, you know, it's great. And, you know, directors contacting me that performance is really good and stuff. And so now it's the only real advantage is I don't have to, you know, just self-tape as often. I can go in and meet a director and,
yeah, you have a right to be at the party now.
Exactly.
You're like, welcome to the table. It's not like you have to like, I'm
totally,
no, I'm a real actor too.
100%. Yeah. I mean, yeah. So that's really it. And I'm just getting to do stuff that I really have always wanted to do. And that's really exciting. Like,
was it, I mean, we were talking about Nat at the outset, like, was it informative? Like, you know, cause you know, I started talking to him 2 or 3 years ago and like, he had like a flush of like, you know, really cool, exciting opportunities that he's been able to capitalize on. And I'm like trying to do the math of like where you were at then when like Vault was happening, et cetera. Is that informative for you as you kind of like embark on this kind of like next stage of a career and kind of make the right choices?
I mean, there's certain things that Nat really can help me with by talking to me about it, but it's kind of its own thing. I mean, this movie's kind of a different thing than I've ever really experienced. Or I mean, it's been a crazy year. I mean, it's hard to it's hard to just make it like a, what's that word? There's a good word, quantify. It's hard to quantify how each thing, you know, affects or whatever, you know, there's no rule book and it's totally different. And this has been a totally different experience because it's been so in the zeitgeist and it's been so disturbing. And I think that in the past year, with the exception of Jumanji, I've done so many disturbing things that I think Nat has not known what to tell me about, like, well, I don't know what to do when you do like this fucking, all this really, really dark shit. Like, I'm not sure exactly what to tell you, but I think, he's been helpful and just, I think he's just very helpful just as an actor and as a friend, as my brother, you know, that's what he helps me the most is just emotionally when I was having a hard time, he can just be there. You know, that's the best thing. But it's just different. It's crazy. No friends, and you feel it's kind of isolating being in a experience like this. Actually,
what's the who are the directors you're obsessed with right now? Like, do you keep like the running list?
Yeah, of course. Well, I mean, PTA is always the guy.
Yeah.
Paul Thomas Anderson's he's the guy. he's amazing. Robert Eggers is amazing.
Yeah, The Witch was.
He's great.
Yeah.
Ari's a genius.
Anyone that A24 works with, basically. Yeah, just get exactly. in like that group text with yeah. whatever director list they've got going.
Yeah. Pretty amazing. I'm trying to think of because there's been so many amazing guys who have come out. Well, what genre? You know, because
I don't know. I mean, so it sounds like, yeah, where are your sensibilities genre-wise? Are they all over the place?
All over the place.
Yeah.
I just love really good movies. I see everything. I mean, I'm like a movie buff, so yeah. I see everybody. I mean,
because I noticed, I think you Instagram or something, a thing about Tom Cruise the other day.
Yeah, I love Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise is the best.
Tom Cruise is top five actors of all time.
Yeah, easily. I'm going off to see Mission next week.
Of course.
And they're doing, I love it also because
it's amazing.
Ulterior Motive is they do the premiere in, I've been to Dubai for a Mission Impossible movie.
Oh my God.
What was the last one? Oh, Vienna. And I'm going to Paris next week.
Oh my God.
And yeah, there's not, those movies are my jam. They're my favorite franchise going.
Yeah, they're amazing. I mean, they're amazing. And I love him in those movies, but I really do want him to do more Magnolias and I love Tom Cruise and I love him in the action movies and I respect his career choices. It's I get it. I'm not fighting
110%.
Him, but that guy as an actor is Magnolia really one of the best. Magnolia, Jerry Maguire, Rain Man, Risky Business. He does not get his due as an actor because of Scientology and because of all these different things. The same thing with someone like Kanye does not get the, because of everything that's going on with him politically. These people are the geniuses. Yeah. Of our generation, and
I was kind of bummed that because there was rumors that Tom was going to be in the Tarantino movie.
but he's not going to do it.
Well, I don't know if it was Tarantino's call or not. So he's doing, it's Brad Pitt and Leonardo. So I think he was the Brad Pitt part. I don't know if it was Tom's call or Quentin's part.
Them both. They're both great.
Yeah, I mean, please, but I think Tom doesn't need anything, but I would love to see Tom in the hands of someone like Tarantino or PTA in a real movie. Again. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Who else? Who's the who's the actor you've worked with that's kind of influenced you the most or blown you away the most so far?
Yeah, probably Gabriel or Chris Cooper was super unbelievable for me.
He's one of those guys we were talking about, authenticity. Cooper doesn't, there's no false.
He's just unbelievable. He's one of the best.
Yeah.
He's just unbelievable. He played Salinger in this movie Coming Through the Rye. He was he was unbelievable. I was inspired by the cast in my movie. I was super inspired by.
Yeah, Millie, I would have to say, I hadn't seen her off screen. I saw her in an interview with you. And I was oh, this is an amazing performance.
She's the sweetest. She's so fun. We're just we're best friends. I love her so much.
Awesome. Do you enjoy auditioning?
No, it's awful. It's awful. I've grown to like it a little more. And when you get in the room with the director, it's fun to audition. Yeah. I like the pressure, and it's the same thing with theater. I like the pressure of there being stakes, because it's very easy to be sitting in a trailer, sleeping, and then going out and having to do an emotional scene.
Right.
There's no stakes, and it just feels what am I doing? It doesn't feel I like there's stakes of just being there, and you got to do it once, and you don't have the job, and you got to fight for it. I like that. Hunger and whatever. But when you're just going in for just a casting director or a casting associate, it really can be hard. And especially when it's something that you're doing it for the bills, or you're doing it because you want to keep working, it can be tough. And so just do it. Anybody's listening, just do it. And you, there are fun things you can do with every single thing. I did a scene from Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants recently in an acting class, and it was really important for me to do that. It was very exciting, actually.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Which part did you play? Was it one of the sisters?
It was one of the guys.
Okay.
No, it was one of the guys who are written so underwritten. It's hilarious. I mean, they come in and they have 9 lines, but I did an Irish accent, and I was doing we're just doing it. It was really fun to do that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was cool.
What is, I was saying my love for Mission. Is there a franchise that you love right now? What's your, we talk about the PTAs. Okay. What's
franchise
your,
now?
Yeah. What are you? Are you a Star Wars guy? Or are you Harry Potter?
I'm a Harry Potter guy. I'm obsessed with Harry Potter.
Yeah.
The Before trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really count. I'm a Star Wars guy too.
Yeah.
Love Star Wars. You know what? This is going to be bad. I'm going to lose all respect. And
We started there. Don't worry.
Yeah, you do love Dune, but this is worse than Dune. I promise. And I love him, and I'll stand by him. I love the Final Destination movies. And I just watched every single one of them in a row with all my friends, and I love them. I love them.
I know people that love them. I've heard you're not alone. Okay.
Really? No, I feel alone. Them. I feel alone. I love it with friends. I mean, of course.
It's probably a good group experience.
It's the best group experience. Right. And there's no movie that you can put on that everybody has fun. I mean, you watch a dude just like arms get cut off, you just start laughing.
Right.
I mean, I love those movies. And like, it's, some are worse than others, but like some are like really good, just classic gory fun. And I love them.
Well, as your new advisor agent, don't take the Final Destination movie. Do the Harry Potter movie.
I'll never do Final Destination, but I will watch them to the day I die on a roller coaster.
What the irony. Have they done that in a Final Destination movie?
Yeah.
Someone watching a Final Destination movie on a roller coaster?
No, that would be awesome. I mean, someone watching Final Destination 3.
It's too meta for those films.
Yeah.
Amazing. It's been good to get to know you today, man.
Yeah,
escaping
man,
the heat
fun.
A little bit. It's a good thing. Everybody should check out Hereditary. If I haven't touted it enough on this podcast, you know I'm obsessed. It's one of the best of the year. It's going to be in my top 10, definitely. And congratulations on all the success, man. I'm excited to see the first directing effort. I assume you're going to try and do the festival kind of thing with
that.
Yeah,
totally.
Nice. Keep me posted. And 100%. And let's tell you're the first wolf on the podcast. Suck it, Nat.
Yeah, good. I love that.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks a lot.
Appreciate that.
And so ends another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. I'm Daisy Ridley, and I definitely wasn't pressured to do this by Josh.
1,000,000 of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.